Well, Doc, here we are again this morning, and we have been talking about our life and really trying to answer that question that James put out for us. What is your life? We've specifically been talking this week about Lot, a man who had every opportunity to make something of his life, and yet at every turn of the way seemed to make a wrong choice. And we ended last broadcast by really talking about the importance of choosing. And I wonder if we do a little something different this morning, kind of as a lead-in. I've heard you at different places where we've been ministering and serving together use an illustration related to the game of chess to talk about the importance of choice. And I think that might be a great way to lead into what you're going to talk to us today about.
I've used the analogy of chess. I played chess, but I never won at chess. And those of you who are chess players know that the key in playing is moves that you make. And if you took all of the elements of chess, the numbers of the pieces, the numbers of the squares, you end up with up in hundreds of thousands of options in those players and squares. But a good chess player can trap you in three plays. And you're still moving. I'm playing, and I'm playing against a good chess player. And he sees a move that I make. He knows that I just sealed my doom. But I don't know it yet.
I mean, you could still keep playing for another half hour.
I'm still making moves. But that good player knows I'm already cooked. And it's good for us to remember that that's a good parallel for life.
That's so interesting because that matches the story of Lot. You know, we go all the way to chapter 19 in Genesis and see the last move, the checkmate spiritually, if you will, in the cave there. But you're saying by your analogy that the move that lost the game for Lot happened in chapter 13.
Yes.
And there's a lot of moves between chapter 13 and chapter 19. But the game was pretty much over spiritually for Lot, although the grace of God could have intervened at any moment had Lot chosen differently along the way.
The destiny was determined.
That is a powerful, powerful illustration.
Yeah, and you look at the point, and we're still making our moves. We're still moving the pieces.
Mm-hmm.
But the good player knows. And a godly counselor, many of you are counseling with young people, and you see someone making a choice. And you say, but don't you know where that's going to end? And they say, no, they don't. But you say, okay, now you make that choice. God is gracious. God is able to restore. There will be consequences. But yet you as a counselor know when that choice is made where that is going to lead. But that inexperienced one doesn't know. Still thinks he's in control. Still thinks the moves are counting for something. But yet the game was lost.
How did Lot get to, because it seems to me that these life-making, life-directing choices that get made like this, God doesn't just let them happen without us being aware. There seems to be a process. I mean, can you take us through the process of how Lot made this decision?
Well, when you look at how the conflict was solved, Abraham gave Lot the option to choose. And in verse 10 of chapter 13 is the word lifted. And Lot lifted his eyes. And then in verse 11, then Lot chose. And then in verse 12, then Lot pitched. You see the progression. In my Bible, I've circled them. And I see the downward progression. Lot lifted first. That is, the gaze was the beginning of his downfall. You see that with Samson. I went to Timnath and saw. When Achan confessed his sin, he said, I saw the goodly Babylonish garment. Then I coveted, I took, I hid. And you see that progression that is going on. And here Lot lifted his eyes. So the gaze was step number one. And we always ask ourselves, where are we looking? If you could really uncap the heart of a person and his true desires were cast up on a screen, where is that pointing? What are the true desires that are there?
Does the Bible tell us anywhere what those kind of desires are that just seem to characterize?
Well, I think in 1 John 2:15, 16, and 17, love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. We have the major categories, lust of the flesh, lust of the eye, the pride of life. And we have a listing of negative categories there. We find Satan trying to tempt Christ in chapter 4 with the things that were right things for him. In other words, everything Satan used to tempt Christ were eventualities.
Were good things.
Yeah, they were what was eventually God the Father's will. Hmm. Turn the stones to bread. It was eventually God's will for him to eat, but not then. It was eventually God's will for the Son, God the Son, to be magnified before the eyes of the people.
Hmm.
But not then. It was eventually God's will for God the Son to be reigning over all the kingdoms of the earth. What Satan was doing, knowing he could not tempt Christ to do that which was not God the Father's will, he made another attempt. I'll prematurely get them to exercise. I'll tempt him, and he knows these are eventually God's will.
Mm-hmm.
What I'll do is I'll offer him premature. That's what I tell young people a lot of times. Find out what is fun in life, and then find out when things are most fun, and things are most fun in God's timing.
Mm-hmm. And that's part of what it seems like Lot did, because, you know, there were other godly people who lived in cities.
Yes.
There were other godly people who made choices not to live in tents and to wander. But Lot's choice here was clearly wrong.
Yes.
The text tells us what.
Yeah. And it says he lifted his eyes, and note this in verse 10, and beheld the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, as the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt. There's where I think is a big hint of Lot's gaze. Because when Abraham, in a faithless move, goes down to Egypt, Lot was with him. And I think Lot got a gaze on that which was wrong. I don't think he ever got it out of his system. I try to tell parents, be careful about the things to which you expose your children. Families you visit, do they have the fancy cars? Do they have all of the things and the stuff that we want in life, but yet they have religious convictions that are very weak, they have patterns that are very weak, but yet the child doesn't see that. The child sees that BMW in the garage. The child sees the massive home. The child sees, well, then I'm going to be a doctor. Then I'm going to be an attorney. Then I am going to be so-and-so. And in an unwise move, we make exposures and we create a thirst. And those kids say, I don't care how long I live, I am going to have those things.
Right. And not that being a doctor is wrong or being a lawyer. But the point is you're making is so valid. And it's interesting in verse 1 of chapter 13 that we're introduced to the story with a little statement that Abraham came up out of Egypt.
Yes.
And Lot was with him.
And so now what does Lot do? His gaze, and he sees like the land of Egypt. He's seeing that.
What are some things you've done as a father? Because one of the things that I appreciate about your family, your son especially, is that your son is now serving as a youth pastor in Hawaii and doing a great job. What kind of things did you do as a father to set the gaze?
I chose not to make choices that would enhance my image. In other words, if I was going to make an exposure, I would expose them to needy people.
Hmm.
I would turn down invitations from those who would be in high ranking things. I had a friend who was professional baseball for many years. He'd let me know where they were. He wanted me to sit in the dugout with him when he was managing. And he'd say, we're landing in Chicago. If you can meet me at the airport, you can ride our team bus in, et cetera, et cetera. And I remember one time I got in my car. I was driving to Chicago to meet, and I got thinking to myself, is his position influencing this decision? And this is something that would really enhance. While I was driving across I-94, I said, now, if Alice, a lady in our church, called her an aisle athlete because she'd hit the aisle, we know when to close the invitation, don't know when Alice hit the aisle because she was so filled with needs. I thought, if Alice had called me and said, Pastor Les, could I come in and talk with you this afternoon? And I would say no, because I had this, and this to do. Then I'm thinking, then why I still have those things to do, why would I prioritize driving across I-94 to Chicago? And I turned around.
Hmm.
I said, I'm never going to set my life based on who can enhance my opportunities and who can enhance. And I went back home because I said, I'm not going to do with him what I would not do for the neediest member of our church.
Hmm.
And what I've done with our kids is I have exposed them to needy people. And I have tried to not create in them this image of things equals life. You know, we've wrestled through a lot of things with our kids. But what I wanted to was expose to them that they were needy people. We don't make decisions based on what people have.
Right, right.
We will make that option.
I've also observed in your life and in Charlene's life a tremendous appreciation for other servants of God. And your children are on first-name basis with many of God's hidden servants. You know, not just the ones that everybody knows, but sometimes the small pastor of the small church back out in the woods that comes to Heart Conference or comes to some of these other activities or places where you're at. I've seen the care and the concern, and I think that's a way that many of our listeners could set the gaze. Missionaries coming to their home, have yes. them in to eat, take time to invite the speaker over to expose them to your children. I think those are some wonderful ways to set the gaze.
And not just the ones who would enhance our image. I know people who would, if you were to look at them, it's all image. I will only make choices that will enhance my image of the family. And
our kids picked that up.
Then in verse 11, then Lot chose, the next verb, he chose. So obviously I'm going to choose where I'm looking. And in verse 10, the word chose to me is why Lot ended up in the cave. But everything was leading up to that by his heart condition. Mm-hmm. But when he made that choice, that's when he made that last move to his final steps. That's he crested the hill and started a downward skid.
But he never would have bought the idea that it was a downward skid chapter 13.
Oh, no.
I mean, the best is yet ahead kind of deal.
Yeah, right.
Because I'm going to get to Sodom, and then he gets in the gate. I mean, that whole idea of sitting in the gate there, he's
yes.
somehow a political leader there.
Yes.
That's an interesting dynamic there.
And then verse 12, it says, and Lot pitched. He dwelt and pitched. What was a sojourn became a permanent lifestyle.
Hmm.
And so I always traced those verbs. Lot lifted, Lot chose, and Lot pitched.
Hmm.
And he pitched as a permanent lifestyle where he had gazed. And his gaze determined what he had chosen. And then it ended up in that context.
Yeah, it's ultimately going to end up, like you said a moment ago, in a cave.
Yes.
And Lot would never have made those choices.
No.
It's amazing. You know, I'm just sitting here thinking, and I wish we had more time. I'm going to give you a little bit of time here at the end to close this out again, Doc. But it just seems like Satan did a switch and bait.
Yes.
Instead of showing Lot the cave where he was going to end up, he showed him the city. And that's so like Satan. I mean, our listeners this morning are driving to work, and I'm sure that their gaze is on something. And if they're not careful, they're going to be looking at the wrong thing. And Satan is going to make sure they don't see the real end. He's going to show them the city. Doc, we have just a few seconds here to close out this morning. Talk to us a little bit about the whole issue of choice, because I know that's where we're going.
Well, a good way to contrast that, you see the word lifted there in that passage. Later we see in that chapter, God lifted Abraham's gaze.
Hmm.
And we're going to start seeing a contrast between Lot and Abraham.